Vasudevaya Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vyasadeva is taking us through sound vibration into Dwaraka, into the palaces, 900,000 palaces of Dwaraka, into the intimate exchange between the queens of Krishna and Krishna entering into Dwaraka after a long separation, and even into the hearts of the queens who are receiving Krishna after that long separation. Very confidential. And what Vyasadeva discloses is taken even further by our great acharyas. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami. We're just swimming around in the ecstatic emotions of the queens. And if our hearts were more and more pure, we could actually resonate with that same happiness. So it starts, the insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens, who were shy, first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced Him visually, and then they sent their sons to embrace Him. In brackets, Prabhupada puts, which is equal to personal embracing. But, O chief among the Bhrigus, that's Shaunaka, Sutta speaking to Shaunaka, but O chief among the Bhrigus, although they tried to restrain their feelings, they inadvertently shed tears. Previously was described in the previous chapter, the ladies that had come from the inside of the palaces to the outside of the palace. Here Krishna is going in the palace, but now when Krishna was leaving, they had gone outside of their palaces just to catch the last glimpse of Krishna before He went. And they were overwhelmed with knowing that Krishna would be gone, the feelings of separation. So Prabhupada explains, in such circumstances, it's natural for a woman to cry. These ladies in the palaces, their only thought was Krishna's happiness, and they thought, maybe if we cry at the time that Krishna leaves, it will be inauspicious. What can be auspicious and inauspicious for Krishna? But they were thinking like that. So they tried to check their tears. It even describes they tried with their hands to push the tears back in their eyes so the tears wouldn't come out. But they failed. Tears were streaming, so they went back in the palace and went on the roof of the palace, so Krishna wouldn't have to see them crying. And now he's entering. So again, it's the wives, the females, having their natural affection for Krishna. Prabhupada does make it very clear in the purport that in relation to Krishna, all living entities are prakriti. Although para prakriti, we're prakriti, we're all in relation to Krishna, we're female. That is, enjoyed by the enjoyer. He is the Purusha, we are the Prakriti, we are meant to be enjoyed by him. But in the embodiment role, they were in bodies of females, and so, and not only females, but queens. So they had this very, very, not only elevated position, status-wise, but emotion-wise, they were queens. They were married to Krishna. Krishna had fulfilled their desire that they should be accepted by him. He should accept them as queens, and he accepted them as queens, and established these fabulous palaces, provided all amenities and everything. And that wasn't at all what they were interested in. Just like Narada saw, the queens themselves had hundreds of thousands of maidservants, but it wasn't like, oh, maidservant, you can go fan Krishna. They were in the mood of the maidservant, although they were queens. They were wives. Their mood was the maidservant of Krishna. So they have this quality of shyness. Prabhupada speaks wonderful things about the quality of shyness for a woman. The quality of shyness is the primary feature of beauty for a woman. It's the ornament of their character is their shyness. And it's the power of a woman, not the what our modern commercialism, marketing, consumerism, the seductive nature of a woman. It's disgusting. You know, to sell toothpaste or to sell pens or to sell anything, it's, you know, a half-naked woman in some seductive pose to sell toothpaste or to sell a pen or sell a computer or sell anything. But that's not appealing. On a spiritual platform, it's the opposite of appealing. It's disgusting. And what's appealing is the shyness of the queens. They're queens. They're married to Krishna. But they have this natural shyness. And so, in stages, 1, 2, 3, 4, they want to embrace their husband. But their shyness checks that. And so the first is they, within the innermost recesses of their heart, and this is the verse, first, they embrace Krishna. And then with their eyes, they embrace Krishna. They haven't moved yet. They're just standing there filled with rapture of their husband approaching them. And the third is they send their sons to go and embrace Krishna. So in one sense, their feminine shyness their ornament was inhibiting their expression of their natural affection for Krishna. But actually it was enriching, enhancing, embellishing, making even more complete and wonderful and refined and fully experiential, minus the actual physical embrace. Very important. So one by one, within their heart, with their eyes, with their sons, the Prabhupada writes, still the act remained unfinished. And tears rolled down their cheeks, despite all endeavors to check them. The sending of the son to embrace the husband is with the understanding, the mood, and the fact that the son is born, produced from the body of the mother, and so the extension of the mother is the son. The son goes to embrace Krishna, and that's their embrace of Krishna. And he says explicitly, the embrace of the son is not exactly the embrace of the husband and wife from the sexual point of view, but the embrace is satisfaction from the affectionate point of view. And then Jiva Goswami adds, the embrace of the eyes is even more effective in the conjugal relation, meaning from the emotional point of view, in one sense it's a reserved emotion, but in the other sense it's an unreserved, unconstrained emotion. What expression may come by a physical act can be consummated just by the eyes. In the descriptions of the Ajamila story, Prabhupada explains this embracing program is a Shudra program. And embracing with the eyes is a sattvic expression of the same thing, emotionally, same thing, but without the potential, and generally with potential it follows that the agitation of the mind in the lower modes of nature. And Jiva Goswami adds that in the relation between husband and wife, there's nothing wrong in such an exchange. So we could say conversely, between not husband and wife, such eye contact and affectionate exchange may not be so appropriate. Without detailing what that means, it's in brahmachari life to there are different levels down to the gross physical act of associating intimately with the opposite sex, but it starts with contemplating in the mood of enjoying. Now here, This is the queens, they have no material taint. So they're offering themselves fully in Krishna's, for Krishna's pleasure, is not with a calculation of their own pleasure. It's not in their capacity, it's not in their consciousness. But the pure love that they have is of that nature. It's conjugal nature. This conjugal, the material world is quite perverted reflection of that spiritual counterpart. The whole idea of spiritual life is to leave behind, to let die, figuratively and even literally, to let die the material affinity, and to awaken, to bring to life the rich spiritual attraction, the reality that this material world is just the reflection of and a covering of the real happiness of the soul. So this is the real happiness of the soul being expressed by most qualified personalities, the queens of Krishna. The next verse, text 33. Although Lord Sri Krishna was constantly by their sides as well as exclusively alone, his feet appeared to them to be newer and newer. That's, we don't think of people's feet being newer and newer. But Krishna's feet are like that. The happiness of serving Krishna at his lotus feet. The verse goes on, the goddess of fortune, although by nature always restless and moving, could not quit the Lord's feet. So what woman can be detached from those feet, having once taken shelter of them? It's almost like there's a foot obsession or something. Somebody, Vyasadeva just has a thing for feet. It's the expression, in one dimension of it is, we discussed with Rupa Goswami, the mind represents the bee and the feet of Krishna represent standing upon the lotus, and the lotus has honey and the feet have honey, and so they want the honey. So in metaphorical language, the mood is one of humility, simply serving the feet. And the feet of Krishna are so complete that it's detailed here, the goddess of fortune. She's always at the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, and the queens are always wanting to serve the lotus feet of Krishna. But the goddess of fortune, who wants the goddess of fortune? In this material world, everybody wants fortune. As one economist was saying, everybody wants to be rich, let's face it. In explicit language, everyone wants to be rich and become richer and richer. That's the paradigm, that's like the model. And now, with the economy going south, people are very unhappy. Suicides left and right. Their entire fortune is smashed in within days, gone. It took lifetime to build, and in days it's gone. So the goddess of fortune, she's restless, Prabhupada explains. In this material world, there's no one that has permanent fortune, however clever they may be. There may have been big empires in different parts of the world. There have been many powerful kings all over the world. And there have been so many fortunate men. But all of them have been liquidated gradually. This is the law of material nature. But spiritually it is different. And how is it different? It's different that the object is Krishna. And when Krishna is the object, Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrama Sevyamanam, hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, as Lakshmis or gopis, are serving the lotus feet of Krishna. And although otherwise their tendency is restless, why are they restless? Because there isn't any satisfaction in serving the cravings of avaricious men. So she doesn't stay. But as far as the lotus feet of Krishna, she's fully satisfied. So not only fully satisfied, the expression is the happiness that she experiences is newer and newer because the freshness of Krishna is there, newer and newer. And so she doesn't want to go anywhere. She doesn't go anywhere. The lotus feet of the Lord are so inspiring in newer and newer ways. That means that lotus feet, the mood of serving Krishna in a humble manner, it's so inspiring in newer and newer ways that the devotee, once experiencing that, doesn't want to go away for anything. Nothing. You have an invitation to take anything, the answer is no thank you. Kolavichar Sridhar, when the Mahaprakash Leela was performed, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called for him. It's such a nice in Chaitanya Bhagavat it's described very nicely. Mahaprabhu is in the mood of the Lord and he's exhibiting his supremacy openly, whereas otherwise it was concealed. Openly. He said, bring Sridhar. They said, how will we find him? Just listen in the dead of the night to the sound of the holy name. You will hear him chanting. Just follow that sound. There's no lights, no street lights and torches. It's just follow that sound and you will find him. In the middle of the night, loudly chanting the holy name. And they told him, Sridhar, Mahaprabhu wants you to come. I can't come in the assembly of brahmanas. I'm an insignificant personality. I have no place. But Mahaprabhu wants you to come. They forcibly picked him up and brought him. And placed him before Mahaprabhu, who said, Sridhar, you have captured my heart. I want you to take a blessing. Take something. No, I don't want something. I'm telling you, take something. I want you to take something. Take something. Sridhar, I'll give you all of the mystic opulences that are mine. I'm Yogeshwara. Sridhar, they're yours. No. Sridhar, I am Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. Unlimited wealth is yours. No. I'll give you a position in the heavenly planets. You name it, it's yours. No. Take something. I order you. So he asked for two somethings. On your order. I want always to be in the association of devotees. Life after life, whatever my situation may be. And the other is, if it so pleases you, that you come and harass me and torture me and give me difficult time to take my wares. If that brings you happiness, let me do this lifetime after lifetime. Let me always be in your service in a way that is pleasing to you. Sridhar, you have captured my heart. I am yours. I am your property. You can sell me in the marketplace for any price you like. I am yours. So this is the wealth of those that don't want anything material. And that's, you can't imitate, pretend, you know, put on a cosmetic that looks like detachment. It's attachment to Krishna. And the queens have that attachment to Krishna. They're goddesses of fortune. They're simply attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. Then Prabhupada extends that to the living entity. Okay, they're the goddesses of fortune. What about us? We're little jivas that are conditioned and bumping around in the darkness and scraping our knees and elbows and banging our heads against the dark walls because we're blinded in a dark place. But by nature, we're also para prakriti. We're also, he explains, feminine, or to be enjoyed by Krishna. Such potencies are always employed for the satisfaction of the employer or the enjoyer. The supreme enjoyer is the Lord Himself, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:29. Bhagavad Gita 5:29. Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. Suhridam. Yatvamam Shanti Mritsati. So, Krishna is the bhokta of everyone's sacrifices. Who is there that can say, I make no sacrifices? Everyone is making sacrifices. Maybe formal, informal. We're always making some kind of foregoing something to do another something. We're making some sacrifice. So, Krishna is the bhokta. And that's the position, that's our position. We're enjoyed. He's the bhokta. He's the enjoyer of whatever it is that we do. That's our position. Then, very nice sentence. The potencies, therefore, when engaged directly in the service of the Lord, revive the natural color. Revive the natural color. And thus there is no disparity in the relation of the potent and potency. The natural color. There's the unnatural color. It's called the three gunas. Trigunamayi. Yellow, red, and blue. But that's not natural color. There's a natural color. The natural color is Shuddha Sattva, where there's no taint of even Sattva, which to speak of Rajas and Tamas. But in that Shuddha Sattva, there's the full variety, or the natural color, the real thing, the real deal, as they say these days, the real deal, the real thing. The spiritual world is filled with the richness of natural in the absolute sense of natural beauty, natural color. That natural color, of which this is just a reflection, is restored, revived in this language. When the potency is fully engaged in the service of the potent. That's spiritual life. That's Krishna consciousness. And to go to that realm of Krishna consciousness, there has to be such a strong attraction that we can let go of this pale modes of material nature program. We hold on to it very tightly, foolishly. It prevents our spiritual lives from growing. So the Bhagavatam, this is the lotus feet. The Bhagavatam is the first canto, is the lotus feet of the Lord. He's lifting his dhoti and showing his lotus feet. And there they are, in this mood of just wanting to serve him, as the goddesses of fortune, the queens, are just wanting to serve his lotus feet. And so the richness of spiritual happiness, the natural color of their lives, is being exhibited. And finally, here's how Prabhupada concludes. Another very nice expression. Generally, people engaged in service are always seeking some post under the government or the supreme enjoyer of the state. Government jobs are coveted jobs. They're very stable. The economy may go through its crazy periods, but the government will always be there. It's very stable. Good master, at least in an ideal sense. So what to speak of what is the real ideal sense? To have the Lord as one's master. To be in the service of the Supreme Lord. Once engaged in the supreme governmental service of the Lord, no living being wishes to be relieved from the engagement. The highest perfection of human life is to seek the same employment under the Lord's supreme service. This will make one extremely happy. And then, as the result, one need not seek the moving goddess of fortune without the relation of the Lord. It's just been, you know, Durga Puja here all over India. And now other places of the world, they're getting into it too. Then comes Lakshmi Puja. And what if, why? It's an expression of what falls under the category of Hindu religion. But the Bhagavatam is, you know, non-Hindu in that sense, because it's not. This is something that one should not pursue. But how can one not pursue? Everyone wants to get richer and richer. Everyone wants wealth. Everyone wants fortune. And they're striving day and night for their whole lifetime to get it. But a devotee isn't thinking like that. A devotee need not think like that. They just want the lotus feet of the Lord to serve. And they're indescribable happiness. The problems of life are the consequence, the root cause of those problems is having neglected the lotus feet of the Lord. Thinking something else is nicer. I want happiness apart from that. And we get misery and so many problems. And then we, you know, how do I overcome this problem and that problem? All the how-to questions. Take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And the message of the Bhagavatam here is take inspiration from the queens. That's our Vaishnava spiritual process. We look to those who are very advanced, very elevated, and right away in the first canto, such elevated exchanges are being disclosed. In the innermost chambers of their heart were being taken by Vyasadeva and our acharyas. What are they actually feeling? So that doesn't give us that feeling. We know, at least theoretically, what they're feeling. But if we're listening submissively, in the mood of wanting to please the lotus feet of the Lord, we'll get some inspiration how to be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord and thus detached from the worldly allurements of life. And as a result, taste the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord to our capacity. And continue on and on in that way, the capacity increases as the purity increases, as our way of life becomes more and more and more immersed in simply Krishna bhakti. Still, the fullness of variety of life is there, but the richness of Krishna bhakti overwhelms the material aspect. It becomes a fully spiritual aspect, or in the language here of this purport, the natural color becomes restored. The spiritual dimension is something that we can experience 24/7, all day long, all the time. If we sincerely desire like that, the path is being marked. And the Lord is inviting, please come. And our acharyas are helping us get guidance throughout our journey along that path. That's the, where we're headed is what's being described here. These very confidential exchanges of receiving the Lord in the heart, with the eyes, through those who are near and dear to us, emotionally being completely saturated with satisfaction and happiness. So, any discussion? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yes.
Maharaj, when we read these, hear these topics, what should be our absorption in terms of, should we just appreciate these great personalities and that is a purifying thing? Or
That's a nice beginning. It's dependent upon one's level of spiritual advancement. But that's certainly a nice beginning, appreciation. Then, depending upon one's level of advancement, one can go more deeply. You meditate upon their mood. And as you meditate upon that mood, it becomes your mood. While externally doing duties of life, you're meditating upon their mood and their exchange of love with Krishna. Manmana. And the intention may or may not be, I'd like a mood like that. Then it will follow. But initially it's purification. Here's where we are, here's where they are. And so this is what purity looks like. And by hearing it with faith, it brings purity into one's own life, into one's heart. And so the material attractions automatically, they're subsided by that purity. Anything? Yes.
Using knowledge, the position of Krishna and the feelings of purity. So, in practice, we say,
Because of an understanding of what? Humility comes by an understanding of one's fallen condition. I'm not sure what you're asking. Do it again. I can easily say anything, but I want to make sure I understand what your question is. Go ahead, say it again. A person in knowledge. Okay, but there's no... To understand our fallen condition is made possible by understanding the elevated condition. What's Krishna's position? And moreover, what's the position of those who are intimately related to Krishna? Because Krishna never becomes fallen. But we can become fallen, so we're certainly distinct from Krishna. But here's living entities who are associates of Krishna, and they're not fallen either. And we are. You know, but that's theoretical. So then where do we go with that theoretical? That's going to determine whether humility will awaken in the heart or not. How we practically apply the theoretical. You with me? Did I lose you? Yes?
Who's in a more advantageous position? Are women in a more advantageous position because... Seems like it, doesn't it? It seems like it. And men are... You know, the so-called Purushas thinking, I'm the enjoyer, look out.
So there is an advantage. There's the spiritually speaking, the disadvantage is, now this is in general terms, it's not always so, but the spiritual, the rational faculty, the discerning faculty, the strength of discernment, like Queen Kunti describes, great sages and great rishis and learned personalities, they can't understand you, so what to speak of us, women. And Prabhupada's comment is that generally women have less of a tendency or inclination for that rational, discerning. So that's something that's an asset to on the other side of the detriment. Thinking of ourselves as enjoyer. But, you know, guess what? Women also think of themselves as the enjoyer. Just check it out a little bit. It's, you know, it's the program. And so that's a detriment. The enjoying spirit itself is a detriment. The women are thinking as the men are thinking, I'm the enjoyer. The conditioned tendency is like that. The spiritual tendency is different. So it's really the spiritual tendency that has to be awakened for men or women. And then we play our role or our part in the drama of theistic conduct. okay, I'll be the man, you'll be the woman. This is my role, that's your role, and we'll work cooperatively together to serve Krishna. Because in relation to Krishna, Krishna is the object. And we're the subject. We want to bring pleasure to Krishna. So I'll do this part, you do that part, it will bring pleasure to Krishna. It's really making Krishna the object. That's the key. Because if Krishna is not the object, then we're going to be thinking, I'm the enjoyer, instead of I'm the enjoyed. It's a very simple and very nice science. The science of rasa is very simple. Ashraya and Vishaya. And Krishna is the Ashraya. He's the object. We're the subject. Krishna is the object of love, and we're the abode of love, or the carrier of love. And we direct our love to Krishna. But if we don't direct our love to Krishna, we find some other object. And that's whether it's man or woman. We got another object. So the Vedic system is, the woman is to be protected by her father, by her husband, by her elder children, so that that sentiment, that natural sentiment, doesn't get exploited or misdirected, misused. So that means the person that's in the protector position needs to have the proper discernment. Krishna is the object. Not my daughter is an object for me to enjoy, or my wife is an object for me to enjoy, or my mother is an object for me to enjoy. Then everything's just corrupted. Totally corrupted. So the man, answering your question, the man has this responsibility to be very clear who is the object, and direct his life and those that are depending upon him to that object, Krishna's lotus feet. And I am enjoyed, or the servant of Krishna's lotus feet. That's what it means to give protection. Anything? Yes. Mood of service in relation to the deity form. Sure, we can cultivate that mood of service to the object, Krishna, through the deity form. Exactly. Aside from duty, what is the aspect of deity worship that we should meditate upon? There's people coughing and crying while you're speaking. I'm sorry. My ear gets distracted by that, and I miss your point.
In what ways we can cultivate?
In what way you can cultivate Krishna as the object through the medium of deity worship? That's what you want to know. The things that in conditional life we like to enjoy, repose that upon the deity. We like wealth, So, opulence. We like parties and festivals centered around the deity. We like intimacy of disclosing our mind in confidence to another, and that we know that we're being understood and accepted and appreciated. Repose that with the deity. And we shouldn't, a caution is we shouldn't be willy-nilly or imaginative in how that's to be done, but in a regulative manner. So it's certainly a dimension of deity worship that it brings one's life minimally to the quality of goodness just by the regulation factor. You know, so at such and such o'clock in the morning, you know, whatever the previous day was, we're setting the new day. It's Mangalarti time, and then we regulate our life. So it takes us away from, that regulation takes us away from the passion and ignorance of life. Extremes that pushes and pulls and makes us stressed out. So we repose, deity worship helps us in this way, speaking just in an overview way or in principle, repose those things that we are naturally attracted to do, minus Krishna at the center, it becomes the body and the extensions of the body, I and mine, so-called I and mine, and reposes on Krishna, same things. Singing. Sing for Krishna. Whatever it is, for the pleasure of in scripturally authorized expressions. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.